Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Scholarly Perspectives episode with Dr. Bharad Nandakumar. I'm Marla.
And I'm David. Today we will be discussing a paper titled Exercise Therapy Guides Cortical Reorganization After Mid-Thoracic Spinal Contusion to Enhance Control of Lower Thoracic Muscles, Supporting Functional Recovery, which was published in the journal Experimental Neurology in 2023. This paper was submitted to us by Asia's Early Career Committee, and our guest today is Dr. Nandakumar. Dr. Nandakumar is an assistant scientist at the MIME Project to Cure Paralysis. And since this was suggested to us by the Early Career Committee, we'll kind of walk through his background a little here. He hails from Chennai, India, and graduated from Amrita University with a Bachelor's of Technology in Electronics and Instrumentation Engineering. He then moved to Drexel University in Pennsylvania to pursue a Master's in Science in Biomedical Engineering, where he worked as a student researcher in the Moxon Neurobiotic Lab, studying the underlying changes in brain circuitry associated with the development of chronic neuropathic pain after spinal cord injury. Moving then to University of California, Davis, to pursue a doctoral degree in biomedical engineering at the Center for Neuroengineering and Medicine in Dr. Karen Moxon's research. He examined the neuronal encoding of posture in the cortex and the role of rehabilitation in the recovery of function after spinal cord injury, a theme that we'll hear about today. This work involved many of the multi-site chronic in vivo electrophysiology experiments that we'll discuss from today's paper. In subsequent postdoctoral training at University of Minnesota's Neuromodulation Research Center, Dr. Nandakumar's work focused on the development of neuromodulation approaches targeting the amelioration of sleep dysfunction associated with Parkinson's disease in non-human primates. His work now in Dr. Ganser's neurotechnology laboratory at the MIME Project focuses on developing neuromodulation therapies to improve recovery after spinal cord injury. So, Dr. Nandakumar, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, David.
And Marla. All right. So to set us up here, I think this paper really could use a methodological primer. So independent of the end effectors you might be trying to study, can you talk a little bit, intro, lay us up here, with the power of the somatotopic mapping technique that you used? Explain the preparation and instruments, and then the conclusions that can be drawn from the setup.
Okay. So in this study, we wanted to investigate cortical plasticity after a spinal cord injury. So after a spinal injury, the brain has to figure out new ways of motor control in order to recover from injury. In fact, a lot of the injuries are, after a lot of injuries, there is a lot of spontaneous recovery. And this is because the brain is actively rewiring itself rewiring itself in this process. And a good way to approach that is to actually stimulate the brain and record movement and muscle activity in the body and see how these patterns change after spinal cord injury. So we are using the approach in an animal model. So we use rodents in the rodent model. Electromyograms are implanted in the parts of the upper body, forelimb, the different parts of the trunk, which includes upper thoracic, mid thoracic, and lower thoracic, both in the dorsal and the ventral aspects of the trunk, and also the hind limbs. And then what we can do is we can systematically go to the motor cortex and stimulate the pyramidal neurons in layer 5 and look at the evoked movement and the EMG responses to identify the map that is actually involved in the motor control of these different muscle groups. And we can look at how these maps also change after a spinal injury. And we can also study the effect of physical rehabilitation, of how these maps can be modified by physical rehab. So we can use these maps as a biomarker of cortical plasticity that we can study after injury. So the main conclusions that we drew from this paper was we showed that After an incomplete spinal cord injury, the lot of the animals were able to spontaneously recover, and they were able to regain the ability to support weight and walk. But in a subgroup of animals, when we gave them physical therapy, more than the ability to just spontaneously recover to walk, the rehab further enhanced the recovery process by improving coordinated stepping. And this, we found that this was accompanied by cortical reorganization with more of an enhanced control of the lower thoracic trunk muscles below the injury level. So we found that if the animals were able to spontaneously recover, the brain utilized a very different strategy of enhancing trunk control above the injury level and utilizing that to actually bear weight and walk. But if the animals got physical therapy, we saw that in those groups, there was in fact more enhanced lower thoracic trunk control that enabled the animal to better take coordinated weight support steps.
Yeah, not to cut you off there, we're really excited to hear about all the evidence you generated to support those conclusions. But starting at the beginning here, for anyone who's maybe not familiar with these types of setups, are these animals, when you're taking the measurements, most people listening, electromyography, okay, brain turns on a muscle, I get it. Are these animals awake, walking around in the cages while you're doing the brain stimulation? Talk a little about that.
Yeah, so these are anesthetized preparations. The animals are anesthetized with ketamine, xylazine preparation, where it's the animal is under light anesthesia, not deep enough that all the motor responses are lost. It's the animal is under light anesthesia, and it's an acute experiment. So it's an endpoint experiment. So the animals get 5 weeks, in this case, the animals, a subset of the animals got 5 weeks of therapy. And after the end of the therapy session, the animals go through an acute experiment where we open up the skull, we insert an electrode, we implant all of these EMGs in the different parts of the body and stimulate the brain. So, yeah.
And the stimulation's in that really well-defined grid kind of pattern. So while this is an anesthetized preparation, is there some power to that grid approach?
Yes, because luckily, in the humans, the homunculus is kind of, you have the sulci and the gyri, and in fact, it's very difficult to access the trunk in the humans because it's deep, it's like deep and medial in the brain. But in the rodent, because the brain is flat, we basically don't have this problem, and we can map spatially along the rostrocaudal and the mediolateral direction. We can map all the way from accessing regions from the forelimb, hindlimb, trunk, even the face. All of that is along this flat map in the rodent, and this makes it really convenient to access the different regions.
Yeah, and due to that convenience, I imagine that this is a well-established approach and a lot was known maybe about like hind limb function, but what's being added here is the trunk somatotopy. So
right.
What did we know before this paper about the trunk brain circuits and their role in locomotion?
Right. So most of the work that's been like examining this organization of the trunk motor, organization of the motor cortex has been in general, it's been done for a long time. Since the 1960s, people have been mapping macaques, rodents, even like there is a Leah Krubitzer from UC Davis. She maps like different species along the phylogenetic tree. She maps like bats, all different species. So most of the focus in the rodent literature is in the context of like either upper limb rehab, upper limb movement, and there is a lot known about the organization of the forelimb, organization of the hind limb even, but somehow the trunk area has been shouldn't say neglected, but there's a lot less work that's done. Simon Gitzer from Drexel University, he was the first ones to have pioneered this study of the organization of the trunk motor cortex, but he did that in neonatal animals. So we came in and we did previous people in Karen's lab looked at examining the trunk motor cortex organization in completely spinalized animals. And what they found, there was no EMGs at that time, no EMGs implanted. And what makes the trunk motor cortex challenging is trunk motor cortex rarely activates, rarely engages by itself, right? Trunk is a biomechanical couple, and it's often engaged with other body parts. So upper limb or hind limb. So sometimes it was just overlooked because nobody implanted EMG electrodes in the trunk muscles. So a lot of the time it was always misidentified as either part of forelimb or part of the hind limb motor cortex. So prior work before I joined Karen's lab as a PhD student, prior work from Gitzer's group and her paper showed that in completely spinalized animals, if you had to give exercise therapy, trunk motor cortex expansion was in fact a necessary component to the recovery of function after spinal injury. In a complete transection model, it was very clear, trunk activation was very clear because you could not activate the hind limbs. But what was tricky is in incomplete models, you could still have residual activation. So you needed a more finer map to be able to understand the trunk motor cortex organization. That's why my first part of my thesis, I revisited the organization of the trunk sensory motor cortex, and we found that there is in fact a somatotopy like any other region, with the lower thoracic trunk part of the cortex that's more more medial and caudal in the rodent brain, and the more and the forelimb part that's more rostral and lateral. And there is this somatotopy that exists that could be exploited after a spinal injury. And we also found that there is a lot of preferential integration that exists with the hind limb and the trunk motor more than the forelimb. And this was useful. This was a useful circuit in maintaining balance.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. I think that was one of the interesting aspects of the paper to me. It was how you pointed out, you know, that most of the research that was previously done was on transections. And in this, you specifically focus on contusion and how, you know, each contusion is unique. And I think that's
right.
Something that we talk to patients about a lot is just because you have, you know, a T4 AISA injury does not mean that you have the same injury as another person with a T4 AISA. And in your paper, you also go into like a mild, you know, mild versus severe. And I just was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what were the unique aspects of using this contusion model versus the transection and the mild versus the severe.
Yeah. So the transection was a good start, good basic science approach to start with to really understand what the trunk motor cortex was doing, right? So just to recap, in the previous work before I joined, when they found that in completely spinalized animals, if the animal had to recover with physical rehab, the trunk motor cortex had to expand into the denervated hind limb motor cortex. And this expansion facilitated the recovery of function. So this was a good starting point. And we wanted to then study a more clinically relevant model because contusion is variable. In the contusion injury model, how we do it is exactly like there is a mechanical impact to the spinal cord. Every injury is slightly different, and it's very very difficult to control precisely what fibers are spared. And depending on what fibers are spared, you're going to have big differences in the recovery of function. And clinically, most of the spinal cord injury is cervical, and most spinal cord injury is actually incomplete. So there's no complete spinal cord injury. So that was the motivation for us to go for a contusion model. And we wanted to vary the severity to understand whether the strategies of motor control were actually similar or different as we varied the lesion severity. So we did a moderate injury where we did a 150 kilodyne, where we applied a 150 kilodyne force. In the moderate injury, there is a lot of spontaneous recovery. In fact, all of the animals, by the end of week five, regardless of whether they had therapy or not, were able to bear weight. So we had this opportunity to study how does the brain reorganize when there is spontaneous recovery using the moderate injury approach. In the severe injury approach, the therapy that we designed did not end up working. So we gave a subgroup of animals therapy, but the therapy did not have a big impact on what was not sufficient enough to have a big impact on the improvement in the recovery process in the severe injury model. But the interesting thing that we found out was that the brain reorganized differently if the animals had weight support versus the animals that did not have weight support. So we found that like the trunk motor cortex, in fact, was more likely to expand into the hind limb motor cortex in animals that had weight support compared to animals that did not have weight support. In the moderate injury model, in all of the animals, the trunk motor cortex actually expanded into the hind limb, denervated hind limb motor cortex. And this kind of was, and it was not different between the therapy and the non-therapy groups. So this was kind of giving us the clue that the fact that the trunk motor cortex expanded in the hind limb, into the hind limb motor cortex is probably related to the restoration of weight support, weight bearing. And the functional gains beyond this hind limb motor cortex, if you need a more functional gain of better interlimb coordination, we think that based on our moderate injury model, there has to be reorganization in the lower thoracic trunk motor cortex that would allow functional gains to go beyond the hind limb motor cortex.
Absolutely. And with the finer mapping of the trunk that you alluded to needing earlier that you then did in this paper, we're excited to hear how that happened. But if you can explain one thing first here, figures one, figure seven, both moderate and severe contusion, showing that this exercise that resulted in some benefit, if they could weight support, to locomotor behavior still had no effect on spared cord matter. So how is it that with no effect on spared cord, you're still having a benefit of exercise in these injured animals?
So we think that that's a good question. So we were actually expecting to see differences, but we were kind of wrapping our heads around it to understand what it was. And we think that when you have physical therapy, so when you don't have physical therapy, a lot of these neurons that are spared are sometimes anatomically spared, but functionally their activity might have gone down because these neurons are no longer engaged in the task. So when we give the physical therapy, what we are doing is we are promoting more activity dependent plasticity, and we think that how we are enhancing the motor control is by rescuing this activity dependent plasticity, and by rescuing the connections in the brain so that they still can access the trunk muscles below the injury level. So we are maintaining those connections. We think we are maintaining those connections through activity dependent plasticity and thereby like keeping them alive.
And possibly, as you speculate in the discussion, maybe we'll get to this a little bit later, can double click it then, but maybe some reorganization below the level of injury can be tapped in through neurons that exist only in the cord. But yeah. Before we get there, in the moderate SCI model, to jump to some of the conclusions so that we can go on to the fun parts that you did, it was clear that exercise showed no difference in locomotor recovery, and yet mapping shifted both the X and the non-X model toward the hind limb regions. So right. Can you talk about the methods, the experimental setup that you used to kind of zoom in on the locomotor specific benefits within the moderate model?
So we would insert an electrode in the motor cortex and go to layer 5 neurons and stimulate and apply like a 300 millisecond train, the 333 hertz frequency, and then we would stimulate the pyramidal neurons. And while we do that, we simultaneously record EMG activity in the upper body, in forelimb, upper thoracic, mid thoracic, and lower thoracic, and the hind limb. And then we would stimulate multiple times, and then we record this movement and muscle activity, and then we would assign a category to every location in the brain. For example, if forelimb alone moved and there was no EMG activity along the trunk or along the hind limb, it would be a forelimb motor region. So if you could find, for example, some sites where you could find both trunk and hind limb work together, so it's probably a hind limb trunk region where there are these synergies that exist, that you can have a forelimb trunk region. So based on the EMGs and the movement, we can classify the motor cortex into these different categories, and then we can look at this map on a per animal basis, and then we can quantify what is the area dedicated to activating trunk musculature. And we found that when we did in our moderate injury, the physical exercise therapy animals, the cortical area dedicated to trunk muscles, activating trunk muscles, was much bigger in the exercise therapy animals compared to the non-exercise therapy animals. And then we could use this approach to not only look at how much cortical representation is dedicated to individual control of forelimb, hindlimb, trunk, we can also look at co-activations of how these different muscles work together. For example, we can look at upper mid thoracic. What is the likelihood that the brain can co-activate upper and mid thoracic, and mid and lower thoracic, and or exclusively activate lower thoracic? And we also find changes in these finer representations. For example, in the animals that got exercise therapy, one interesting result that we found was that likelihood to exclusively recruit lower thoracic trunk muscles was enhanced in the exercise therapy animals compared to the non-exercise therapy animals. And that was a very surprising result to us. Like, how is the brain exclusively able to activate this lower thoracic trunk muscle? If the animal did not get therapy, even if there was a cortical control of lower thoracic, it was mostly mediated through co-activation with the mid thoracic. So we think that in the non-therapy animal, the animal is engaging upper body musculature more, and it's using that, and some of the because there can be a lot of co-activation of the mid and the lower thoracic together in the non-therapy animals. That was interesting result that we saw.
Yeah, so the electrophysiological center of gravity, which I thought was a great, great figure to show that the exercise and non-exercise moderate spinal cord injured animals kind of had that same general center drift in the cortical representation. And yet the exquisite segmental EMG that you took of the trunk allowed for an understanding of the kind of the coordination between the levels. So even though exercise rescued trunk activation, right, what evidence would you say was the strongest to establish and then explain the effect of exercise itself within the trunk? You just double click on that part, the I think main findings of the study.
Yeah, I have a paper on cerebral cortex where we went and really looked with much higher resolution of where the lower thoracic trunk motor cortex is, where the upper thoracic trunk motor cortex is. So the part of the brain that controls the lower thoracic trunk muscles after a spinal injury, there was a big reduction in the likelihood to control lower thoracic muscles. But in the exercise group, this reduction was somehow rescued, physical therapy was still able to help maintain some of the cortical control of the lower thoracic trunk muscles below the injury. And when we looked at we could see that in the responsiveness overall, and we could also see that in the when we examined the magnitude of the EMG response in the lower thoracic trunk muscles. So if the brain was able to control the lower thoracic trunk muscles, in exercise therapy animals, the EMG amplitude for those particular responses were much higher in the exercise therapy animals compared to the non-exercise therapy animals. But surprisingly, when we actually looked at the mid-thoracic dorsal muscle, we found the opposite. We found that in fact the non-exercise therapy animals had a higher EMG amplitude, and the likelihood to recruit dorsal trunk muscles was even higher in the non-exercise therapy animals compared to the exercise therapy animals. So we were confused with how to interpret this result for a while, and then we thought, like, if you look at the non-exercise therapy animals, the animal is using, it's stiffening its trunk and it's using its upper body, it's using its forelimb to actually move around because it has poor ability to bear weight in the hind limb, more than the non-exercise therapy animals. So we think that to actually recover from the injury and bear weight, the brain has adopted a different strategy, in this case by actually recruiting more mid-thoracic dorsal muscles, stiffening the trunk, and enabling transfer of weight to the upper body and moving. Unlike what would normally happen is, normally in the normal animal, the lower trunk and the hind limb would often engage and work together to bear weight and move efficiently. So what we were seeing in the non-exercise animal was actually a compensatory plasticity that we were seeing, and the exercise therapy animal made it adaptive, more similar to how a normal animal would actually move.
And I appreciated in the discussion the use of the word aberrant versus what you now describe as adaptive plasticity occurring within the cord itself. I thought that was just a really nice connection between the brain and the cord. And often, I'm sure Marla's going to wrap us up with what are the clinical implications questions here. But we're often looking at people with spinal cord injuries and saying, oh, no, nothing changed with your brain, right? Some of the motor mapping and the sensory mapping for sure did. So appreciate that part. Marla?
Yeah, Brad, I think every of the clinical side of people that are listening today are wondering, what comes next? Like, what comes next with your research? How do you hope this might apply in a clinical setting in the future? You think this will eventually, the hope is that it'll impact how we program our therapy, post-injury. What's next?
Clinically, how this would impact is, like, currently, right, like for a lot of the clinical rehab settings, we often utilize upper body support and more upper body support and less and a lot of the clinical rehabilitation systems currently are, you have a body weight harness that is going to re restrict trunk control, limit trunk control, while the focus is on moving the extremity. Moving your upper body, moving your upper limb, or getting your legs to move. That's kind of been the focus. But I think for a more enhanced recovery, we have to focus on getting the posture right, getting the neural control of posture right. And to do that, we'll have to somehow design therapy approaches that will actually free the patient from the body weight support that's not allowing for the patient to actually regain some access to trunk control. And we think that based on the preclinical work, it could be better if some of the body weight support systems could be modified in order to improve more ability for the patient to volitionally control their trunk muscles, and somehow focus on therapies that encourage control, volitional trunk control of trunk muscles below the injury, especially the lower thoracic. Either we can do that with FES, pad FES in the lower thoracic when they're actually walking, with TMS, and do something like how Monica Perez's work on paradissociative stimulation. We can do something like that to enhance this lower thoracic trunk control, and maybe hopefully that has a effect on their ability to balance.
You heard it here, folks. Call to action to free the trunk.
Yes.
really looking forward to where this goes, Bharat. I'm sure, I mean, I had a million thoughts just hearing you talk about the appendicular kind of blinders that we have on. So let us know when the next paper comes out. And it was so great talking to you about this today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The paper discussed in this episode was chosen based on the recommendation of Asia's Early Career Committee. The podcast was founded thanks to the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh and is now made possible by your producer hosts, David McMillan, Freya Kalik, and Marla Petrello, our production assistant and editor, Abby Fox, and Asia's front office. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please contact us at SCIPerspectivesPodcast@gmail.com.